I'm Mindy Todd. Welcome to The Point. New Bedford is perhaps best known for its role in the whaling and fishing industries, yet those are but two chapters in the city's history. A Picture History of New Bedford traces New Bedford's story from native Wampanoag hunting ground, its evolution into a whaling powerhouse, and the period when New Bedford was a worldwide leader in the production of cotton fibers. We have three authors of A Picture History of New Bedford joining us to talk about the book. They are Joseph Thomas, Jay Avila, and Alfred Saulnier. Good morning.
Good morning, Mindy.
Morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so we should start by saying that this is volume one of a two-volume series on New Bedford. So this first volume spans the date 1602 to 1925. Mm-hmm. A lot of information packed in here.
Yeah, and that's just touching the surface.
Yeah, so you have, in this one, there's drawings, photographs, maps, there's all this history. Why did you decide to do it in two volumes instead of one?
Well, originally it was a one-volume plan, but the book got so big, and we really had a lot of stories to tell. And we started at 700 pages, mm-hmm. and we got it down. Jay and I worked to get it down. We got it to 600, and then we looked at 500 maybe as feasible, but that was just too big.
Yeah.
So to do justice to all the histories and the stories, and particularly when we get to the present, we want to cover the last 20, 30 years. 40 years.
And the way the personality has changed, the city's changed over the years. Jay, you guys have split this up into everybody's doing different things on this book. How do you split up who's doing what?
Well, I don't think we're so much splitting up who's doing what. I mean, everybody sort of has their little assignments, I guess. We've sort of worked that out. Myself, I'm pretty much in charge of the photographs. Mm-hmm. And I think Al's pretty much the guy.
I was doing a lot of the writing.
Doing a lot of the writing.
And a lot of the research behind the photos and the maps and things like that.
What was your job, Joe?
Well, mostly editing and telling other people what to do.
And then you also have Natalie White and Marsha McCabe on this book as well. What were their roles?
Yeah, Al and Marsha, I gave them the assignments to and Jay and I did the layout. And I sort of perform as a director. Mm-hmm. I sort of put the whole thing together in terms of how the book would look. And Natalie did most of the on-hands copy editing.
Gotcha.
And some writing. But Al, I think, was the major writer in terms of actual assignments.
Yeah, bring out. So before we get to Al, Jay, you were the one that were pulling all these photos. There's some amazing photographs in here. Where did you find all this stuff?
Pretty much most of it is from our collection. We have an archives of almost a million images.
Wow.
And we did draw in, you know, personal collections. We tried to get the community involved as much as we could. And a lot of our personal photographs, we worked with the New Bedford Whaler Museum and the New Bedford Library, the New Bedford Fire Museum, as many institutions as we could, mm-hmm. and really make this a community project.
All right. So Al, he gets these great photos and then says, okay, Al, what's going on here?
Exactly. Some of the times they would come in and they would tell me where something was shot but not anything about it and say, how about a 125-word caption? And it was left to me to try to figure out what was going on and put it into a fashion that would be accessible to our readers.
Mm-hmm. You know, I tried to break the book up into themes. We broke up the chronology and then a topic. Mm-hmm. And so we address things like the Civil War, rum running, you know, the Depression. We have certain events that mark a big part of the development of the city. And but then when we fill that up with photographs, that's I think the captions that Al's talking about. But he also wrote a lot of essays, short narratives about particular topics, the public schools.
Yeah, there were themes that run through the book, like education is dealt with repeatedly for different time periods. Public health is dealt with at different time periods. Industry is dealt with at different time periods. And so each one of those would need a short introductory piece to say what was going on at that particular era.
You could have done a whole book just on industry, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
In fact, this was some of the tough decisions we had to make, how much to devote to industry. Because I had broken the chapters up into four basic segments. One was industry, one was people, one was recreation, and one was events. Mm. And so, you know, some chapters, some periods of time industry seemed to be most important. Others in the 20th century, we're looking at industry, but also there's great developments in the city, in the infrastructure, in the construction, architecture. A lot of these things that took place we wanted to put a lot of time into that.
You write in the preface that one of the goals of this book is not to simply highlight what is unique and extraordinary about New Bedford, but also to depict the daily lives of ordinary citizens. So talk a little bit about why that was important and how you went about finding these stories and images of ordinary folks.
Well, it defines the character of the city. You know, I think people look for that. You know, you want to know about your town. What is it that makes us, you know, the way we are, the way we feel, the streets that we walk, the things that we see, the feelings that we have. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is shaped by the environment. And so how did we get to this particular look? And it's about people, really. The people who developed industry, why they did what they did, and then the people who worked, the immigrants who came over here, the communities they built, the churches they established, and the social groups, the mm-hmm. sports, all of these things, the very human things, are very important to us and to all people, and they should be. And that gives your town the character that it has.
And of course, a lot of people think of New Bedford, you know, the whaling capital for a long time, which transformed this little seaside village to the modern city.
Exactly.
So for New Bedford, whaling was just as much about those who went to sea as those who worked on the shore, those who made the sails, the harpoons, the boats, the barrels. The list goes on and on. Jay, I want to ask you about were there some images you came across that you went, wow, this is a great find?
Yeah, there's a lot of, I sort of was handed the keys to the New Bedford Library by the former mayor. He said, go through whatever you want. If, you know, anybody gives you a hard time, just tell them to give me a call. And a lot of things that they had in there had been sitting in boxes for years, never been scanned, never been looked at. And a lot of those were things that we handed to Al and said, you know, write me 120 words on it.
Oh, my gosh.
Because we had no clue what some of them were.
Yeah, and of course, that whole whaling era, that transformed the city. That was maybe one of the first transformations.
Well, it transformed it in terms of boat building and then shipbuilding and coopers and people who worked with copper because you had to protect the bottom of the boats. But there's one very strange thing that I came across, which was ready-to-wear clothing, which was invented in New Bedford mm-hmm. as an adjunct to whaling.
Yeah.
Because the whalemen would come back with their clothing in tatters and
some
enterprising
clothes.
Dry goods dealer said, ready-to-wear clothing. Yeah. That's the way to go.
Well, that was going to say, the next major industry to have a significant impact on New Bedford was cotton textiles. At one point, New Bedford was the top producer of fine cotton goods worldwide. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people don't know some of this history.
Yeah, and it held that long after the New England manufacturing was already waning in Lowell and Fall River and Manchester. New Bedford held on for the longest, and it was due to its superiority and its ability to produce these fine cottons and silk. And New Bedford transformed also into the silk goods, calico prints, and that was led by Wamsutta Mills. But because we had that niche that we developed, people were able to stick with it during the war years and during years when there was a demand for coarse goods. Fall River and Lowell switched over. Fall River had been doing that as well, but after the war, the boom from the war years, they switched to the production of coarse goods. Mm. And New Bedford eventually did that, but they hung on with the silks and the fine goods and were able to work all the way into the Depression.
Yeah. There's a picture on page 242 of the book that shows Purchase Street circa 1918, streets filled with people, cars, streetcars. It looks like a major metropolitan area. This was a time for major change in New Bedford, right? The city became more modernized with public works and infrastructure mm-hmm. projects.
Yeah,
and you look at the picture and you go, wow.
Well, the city peaked in 1925 with about 128,000 people. And at that time, 125, 128, that's pretty big.
That's pretty big, yeah.
You know, Providence wasn't much bigger than that. And, you know, it was a growing. At every decade, there was 20,000 people added to the census. And, you know, it was a thriving, growing city. And then, of course, it hit mm-hmm. the fan. And
the picture is also important for another thing because it shows Purchase Street after it had been widened mm-hmm. 20 feet. And we also deal in the book about some of these buildings that get lifted up and then pushed back or others where the facade was removed. Mm-hmm. They chopped off part of the building and then put the facade back on it. And that's why you got something that looks like very big and very lively mm-hmm. because it had been broadened.
Mm, yeah. Well, and of course, the history of New Bedford is interwoven with the story of immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Really. So the whaling industry brought people to New Bedford to sail on whaling ships, and some settled permanently. That changed with the growth of the textile mills. Extended families immigrated together, settled in the city. You've got some great immigration stories in New Bedford.
Yeah, and it's unique. New Bedford has that unique immigration of Portuguese and Cape Verde. Now, of course, there are other parts of Massachusetts where there are Portuguese populations, but New Bedford is really where it began. The first Portuguese immigrants came at the turn of the 18th century, the 1700s, and first neighborhoods in New Bedford were in the early 1800s. And the Cape Verdean neighborhoods also, and these are because of the whaling ships stopping off in both the Azores and the Cape Verde Islands for crew, where they could get people to work for nothing, right, and then just drop them off in New Bedford and get a new crew. and some we have stories with the whalemen who went out for 2.5-3 years and ended up owing the ship money.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, so, whaling was not as glamorous as people make it out to be, for sure. Was the Al? You obviously have a. I don't know if you are a historian, but you certainly have the brain of and the research to do all of this. Is this something that you've had an interest in? I mean that you've known a lot about the city that you could...
Well, I was born and brought up locally and basically moved away after high school and only came back after about 40 years and was working on the French Canadians in the New Bedford area when Joe asked me to put that on the back burner and look at things with a much broader perspective.
Right.
And that's what I was doing.
Yeah, so I asked Jay if he came across some photos that were just really went, wow. You had to come across some stories that you just went, oh my gosh, I can't believe.
Well, yeah, there was a fascinating one about a young French Canadian who went whaling and who had his adventure on his first voyage so important that when he died, his obituary appeared in the New York Times as a whaling captain who kicked a whale in the eye.
Yeah. So we mentioned that this is Volume 1, A Picture History of New Bedford, ends in 1925. So you are working on Volume 2 to pick up where that leaves off, right?
Yeah, and because of the way we put this together, the Volume 2 really is about three-quarters done. And we're going to do a little backtracking because we had to skip over, for example, the history of painting and art in New Bedford, and that really begins in the 19th century, but we'll bring that all the way up. The garment, the story that Al was just telling about the ready-to-wear, because that really developed into a much larger story where New Bedford became one of the largest apparel makers in the United States. So that those stories will be told in this volume. And then we have the Strike of 28, the Great Depression, the Prohibition, World War II. And one chapter that we've dedicated to that hasn't been told often enough in New Bedford is the story of urban renewal, because the gutting of the city took place in the 1970s, the late 60s, early 70s, and the riots, the race riots.
Right.
And then we have the more infamous events like Big Dan's, that whole story. I don't know if you remember that. It became national. A story of
I don't remember that story. What's that?
Well,
story?
The movie The Accused was based on that. It was a gang rape that took place.
Okay. Oh, yes, yes, yes. I do know that story.
And it became
a CNN daily
fare, really, in court TV at the time. And it was notorious for that. But we're not going to spend a lot of time with things like that. But
it's part of the history. Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
it is. And the 60s, 70s, and 80s have an inglorious history as well as some new things happening. And we're going to see why we are where we are today, and to do that, we have to look at everything really.
Yeah. So, are you going to bring it up right up to present day then?
Yes.
Yeah.
And we want to show what's happening today because today there's a new renaissance of sorts. You know, it's a little cliche, but there's a lot of young people in town now. There are new galleries. The college has a much more prominent role in the community. There's an art school in downtown, and BCC is also downtown. So we have a new downtown shaping up as more of a place for young people and for artists. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of nice.
Yeah, and you'll have to do Volume 3 when the rail comes in.
I'm waiting 20 years for that. 20 years.
But one thing we did do with this book is we also designed it in mind that this was to be used in the school system.
Oh, good idea, yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we really tried to push here. That's why we tried to cover as much as we could. And you know, I think it's going to happen.
It's sad that people go through the high school and not know very much about where they grew up. Yes, right. They have to learn a lot of currents at the world of the national scene, but so many of those had their local counterparts, and it's good to try to bring it home.
Absolutely. And one of the things I think is interesting, too, you mentioning the art scene, is to bring that history, because I don't think that's a history a lot of people are aware of.
No, in the history of art in New Bedford, the reason why we have such a prolific art history is because it was so wealthy. And the artists who were painting maritime scenes, a lot of them gathered here in the mid-19th century because some of the, Bierstadt was brought here, Van Beest, William Bradford. These guys developed the luminous style in some part, and they built a community of art in the 19th century that carried over right into the 20th century. And now today, we still have that history and that culture.
Yeah, absolutely. A Picture History of New Bedford, Volume 1, 1602 to 1925, authored by Joseph Thomas, J. Avila, Al Saulnier, and not here today, Natalie White and Marcia McCabe. Thank you, all three of you. And I hope you'll come back and talk about Volume 2 when that's done.
Thanks, Minnie.
Thank you. Thank you.